looks like they got it.
Good morning, everyone. I'll call this meeting of the Rules Committee to order and note for the record that we do have a quorum present. Our first item on the agenda is to approve the minutes from Tuesday, April 16th. Leader Damon, would you care to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members, our business before us today is to hear a bill of mine, so I will turn over the gavel to Vice Chair Hollis.
I mean, no, I know, no.
Human bodies.
How cool human environment.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Okay, so next on the agenda is House File 4984 from Representative Long. I move House File 4984 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it be placed on the general register. Representative Long, Chair Long, I believe you have an author's amendment?
I do.
Labeled A1. Would you like me to move A1 amendment?
Sure.
Okay. And would you like to explain your amendment?
Yes, so this is just some technical cleanup to the bill.
Okay. I would like to see, is there any discussion to the amendment? Yep. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, you're changing, moving it from the Historical Society to just the state of Minnesota in general. That's what your amendment's doing. And so is the history or the Historical Society still involved, or like what are you functionally doing, if anything?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Rick. So we have been working closely with the Historical Society. They are not sure that they are the final destination. They're pursuing some other options. And so that was why we wanted to say the state of Minnesota, just in case they determined that another historical society, like a local historical society or another museum, might be the best destination.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Chair, by striking this, are they still fully involved in kind of the point person or Department of Administration or, you know, others? Like, who are you envisioning to actually handle the transfer of the statue?
Chair Long.
Thank you, Chair, and for the question. So, yes, they're still involved. And so this is the resolution. There is also needs to be legislative statutory language to appropriate funds. And so that is where we will be specifying the final decision maker for where the statue is going. And we're working with the Historical Society on language to make sure we're getting that right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and because I don't remember if I actually said I would like to move the A1 amendment, I would like to move the A1 amendment. Is there any other discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, amendment is adopted. Okay, Chair Long, please present your bill.
Thank you so much.
As an
Madam Chair, each state is allowed to send two statues to Congress to represent them. Minnesota currently has two statues in Maria Sanford, who was installed in 1958, and Henry Maurer Rice, who was installed in 1916. Like Minnesota, many states have chosen to submit one civic leader and one political leader. For example, Kansas has Amelia Earhart and Dwight Eisenhower. California has Father Junipero Serra and Ronald Reagan. Maria Sanford, I believe, has stood the test of time. An education pioneer, she was one of the first women to serve as a college professor. Mr. Maurer Rice was an early leader in our state in helping facilitate statehood and served one of its first U.S. senators. But in the more than a century since Mr. Maurer Rice's statue was sent, Minnesotans have accomplished much on the national stage. And I believe it's indisputable that the Minnesotan who has had the greatest impact on national politics is Hubert Humphrey. The process to change a statue is that the state has to pay for a new statue to be made, for it to be shipped to D.C., and to ship the existing statue back to Minnesota. We also need to pass a resolution and deliver that resolution to Congress, notifying them that we have made the determination that we would like to change one of our statues, and that is what the bill before us would do today. We would use the design of the Humphrey statue that stands on our own state capitol grounds, and would ensure that the Maurer Rice statue finds a suitable location to be displayed in Minnesota. I'm proposing that our state update this important representation of a statue in our nation's capital to reflect the history that has transpired since 1916 and select Hubert Humphrey to represent us. I'd like to turn my remaining time over to our two testifiers, noted Humphrey biographer Sam Friedman and civil rights icon Josie Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Long. So my understanding is we have two individuals testifying remotely, and we do have a four-minute limit for each presenter. Our first testifier is Samuel Friedman, professor at Columbia University and author of Hubert H. Humphrey biography, Into the Bright Sunshine. Mr. Friedman, thank you for being with us today, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, committee members. It's a great honor to speak on behalf of the installation of the Hubert Humphrey statue in the halls of Congress. This July, we're going to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the passage and signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That piece of legislation, followed by the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the Fair Housing Act of 1966, collectively represents the apex of Hubert Humphrey's work on the national stage on behalf of civil rights, first as a senator working with Lyndon Johnson and then as Lyndon Johnson's vice president. But you can't grasp the magnitude of Humphrey's accomplishments at the national stage without looking back first at what he accomplished in Minneapolis as mayor. When Hubert Humphrey came to Minneapolis in 1940 to begin his public life after having completed grad school at Louisiana State University, he was not coming to a liberal, blue, tolerant city. He was coming to a city that was notorious for its racism and its anti-Semitism, as well as its anti-Catholic sentiments. He was coming to a city in which a black World War I veteran, Arthur Lee, had his home besieged by a white mob in the early 1930s because he had moved into an all-white neighborhood. He was coming to a city in which the pro-Nazi group, the Silver Shirts, regularly held rallies in Minneapolis that were attended not only by the rabble, but by the elites of the city, the president of the Board of Education, the president of the Industrial Association, doctors, dentists, ministers. He was coming to a city where the leading minister, Reverend Dr. William Bell Riley of First Baptist Church, was an unashamed and vociferous exponent of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, a forged document that claimed that Jews were behind not only the Bolshevik Revolution, but an attempt to rule the world. The Jews, the blacks, the Catholics, the Nisei Japanese, the indigenous people of Minneapolis in that time period did not have enough votes on their own to command the political power to make change. It took Hubert Humphrey to come here and to lead that fight against the electoral odds. He brought with him a political ideology and almost a theology composed of social gospel Protestantism, New Deal liberalism, and most importantly, the experiences he had going to LSU in Baton Rouge, having lived in a Jim Crow society for the first time, having been taught by an exiled part Jewish anti-Nazi professor named Rudolf Eberle. And when he came back to Minneapolis, he saw with clarity the bigotry, the intolerance of Minneapolis itself. He also apprenticed himself, really, to the two great tutors of him on Minneapolis's intolerance. Cecil Newman, the founder, publisher, and editor of the Minneapolis Spokesman, still published to this day by his granddaughter, Tracy Williams Dillard, and Sam Shiner of what would become the Minnesota Jewish Council. At that time, Sam Shiner was basically a one-man anti-defamation league, and they taught Humphrey what he needed to know about the bigotry of Minneapolis, and he gave them access to political power and leadership that they had never had before. As Mayor, Hubert Humphrey set out to do two things, to change laws and to change minds. On changing laws, he pushed forward with groundbreaking laws against employment discrimination, against housing discrimination. He pushed for a police reform program that included sending every police officer to the University of Minnesota for what was called human relations training. In changing minds, he brought the most eminent black sociologist in the United States, Charles Johnson of Fisk University in Nashville, to Minneapolis to lead what was called a self-survey, to make Minneapolis look at itself in the mirror and take account of the bigotry that it had never been willing to face before. And he combined the change of mind with the change of laws. What Humphrey accomplished also made him many enemies. And many of you do not realize that one morning, late one night in February 1947, as he was coming home from the office and trying to work the key in the front door of his home in Dinkytown, an assassin took 3 shots at him and barely missed. That assassin was an avowed white supremacist, an avowed racist. And he was shooting at Humphrey specifically because he opposed Humphrey's civil rights activities. A lot of us think of Hubert Humphrey as the happy warrior, and happy was part of it, but we forget the warrior part. And I just want to conclude by saying that the morning after that assassination attempt, Hubert Humphrey wasn't quailed, he wasn't intimidated, he went back to work, and the work he went back to do led him ultimately to the 1948 Democratic Convention, where he led the insurgency within the party to at last oust the Southern segregationist wing from the party, to at last do what even Franklin Roosevelt had been unwilling to do, fully embrace civil rights. And it was Harry Truman running as a civil rights candidate in 1948, winning an election without the solid South, that laid the groundwork for everything that was going to happen in the Johnson and Humphrey administration, and of course with Dr. King and the mass movement working from the outside in. So, in homage to those incredible accomplishments, to both moral courage and physical courage, I can't think of any better tribute to Hubert Humphrey than that his statue should be in the halls of Congress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Our next testifier is Dr. Josie R. Johnson. Dr. Johnson has been an educator and a public servant for more than 7 decades. She was the co-chair of the Minnesota delegation to the March on Washington. She was also the first African-American regent to serve on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents and creator of the university's Office of the Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs with a focus on diversity. She recently published her life story entitled Hope in the Struggle. Dr. Johnson, please introduce yourself for the committee record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, committee and all. I am Josie Robinson Johnson. Am I clear? Sorry.
Yes, you are.
All right. Again, good morning. And thank you sincerely for inviting me to be here and to share my thoughts with you. I am and feel privileged to have been a friend of Hubert Humphrey, and to share the thoughts that Hubert and I had as friends and colleagues in the struggle. I met him in my early days of working and speaking publicly about civil rights in Minnesota. He was very encouraging and supportive of my expressions and actions regarding civil rights. I must admit, I was surprised and happy to sense his deep respect and feeling about the issues in the language of the Civil Rights Bill. He was a spiritual and strong public supporter, and his political support helped us in our early struggles for the rights of our people. Interestingly, I felt we were old friends and worked for similar experiences and committed to our struggle for justice. We were friends and colleagues working together on our common political and social issues. Hubert insisted that I understood that and accept that as reality. I could smile and we could talk together as we listened to some discussions we had heard a million times. Hubert and Cecil Newman, a person well known in our community and in whom I had deep respect, were close friends. And my respect for Cecil Newman and Cecil's respect for Hubert Humphrey was important to me. I remember Hubert meeting our Minnesota delegation for the March on Washington. His smile with pride and friendship was important. I remember his hug, his words of welcome to the struggle and to DC. Cuba joined our group as we were briefed on the Lourdes March. He continued to show pride and support as the plans were discussed. I thank you for the opportunity to share with you some of my thoughts about my deep friend and dear friend, Hubert Humphrey.
Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. It's truly an honor to have you testify in this committee. We appreciate it. We do not have any public testifiers listed, so we'll now move to discussion of the bills. Member, any discussion to the bill? Representative Damon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Long, just a couple of questions on your bill. First, do we have an estimated cost?
Chair Long.
Madam Chair, Leader Damon, yes, we do. $300,000 is the estimated cost. And so that amount would be carried in a separate bill because we have to have the resolution that would designate to Congress the legislature's state's intent is to change the statute, and then we have the separate bill that would be the cost that will be carried in the state government finance bill. So that would include the cost to make the statute, and we have designated the same firm that made the statute for the mall at the Capitol as the lowest cost option since they had already made that statue and can remake it. And then the cost of transport is the only additional cost.
Follow up, Representative Damon?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion to the bill? Okay, seeing no further discussion, I will let Chair Long offer closing comments.
Thank you so much. Madam Chair, I just want to again express my deep gratitude to Josie Johnson for taking the time to join us in committee and to Sam Friedman for his compelling remarks. I think that it's time that we update our representation. 1916 was a long time ago, and I think that the legislature at that time sent at the statue that best represented their impact on the national stage at that time, but I think that we've had a century of history since then, and updating our representation similar to what other states have done. There's many, many states in the last decade, red and blue, have updated their statues to represent modern legislative and political accomplishments on the national stage, and I think it is time for Minnesota to do the same.
Thank you, Chair Long. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4984, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion prevails, and House File 4984, as amended, is referred to the General Register. I'm going to keep going. Okay, we have one announcement. You can't leave yet. One announcement, we have a rules hearing tomorrow at 10:10 a.m. That rules hearing will be in the state office building, room 200. So if you come here, you will be in the wrong place. Members, there's no further business before the committee this morning. And with that, we are adjourned.
There he is.